Later this afternoon, I'll be able to celebrate a wedding over in West St. Paul. Two friends of mine from Net Ministries are getting married at St. Joseph's. I didn't do the wedding preparation for them. They did that over in West St. Paul. But I'll be able to celebrate this wedding here on the first day of the year. They'll get to start it as husband and wife. But for the dozens of couples that I have prepared for marriage, there are certain protocols and steps that a priest has to follow. He has to ask them certain questions. There's a questionnaire, hundreds of questions, in fact, that they have to answer separately, all of these yes, no's, I don't know questions. And then they look at those together and to see what they still need to talk about. But then in my interview with the couples, I have to ask them some certain hard questions. Questions like, are you related to one another by blood or legal adoption? That always gets a little chuckle from the couple. Really? Are we related? And I tell them, we have to ask. Remember, I'm from Kentucky. We have to ask these questions. There are certain things that would prevent marriage, and one of them is I'm too closely related to this other person by blood or legal adoption. Other questions I have to ask. Are you married currently? That would be a disqualifier for them marrying this other person. Are they being forced into marriage right now? That would be a disqualifier. You have to come freely. There are all these questions I have to ask. Even some might be surprised to know that a Catholic is obliged to marry another Catholic. Now, this is something that we have to work through in wedding preparation if a Catholic is marrying a non-Catholic. Now, it's a little too late at that point, and certainly we can ask a dispensation from this obligation from the Archbishop over in downtown, but it is still an obligation. Now, you might remember the days of you weren't even allowed to be married in the body of the church if you were marrying a non-Catholic. My great-grandma would always tell that story. She had to marry my great-grandfather in the sacristy or in the rectory. That you weren't even allowed to get married in the body of the church. Now, why is that? Is the church too strict? Is she too mean that she would oblige us to marry someone within our own faith? I don't think that's it. I think these requirements, these obligations, are really getting at something deeper. The deeper question being questioned in the couples is compatibility. Am I compatible with this other person in a way that I could give myself over to them, that I could enter into this covenant of love with them? Am I compatible with this man, with this woman, in a way that I can give my heart to them? We ask the question of compatibility all the time, even think of the medical field. If I needed a blood transfusion or an organ donation, it doesn't matter how much I want that other person's blood or I really need that organ. If it's not the right match, it's not going to work. It might actually kill me if I try to receive blood or an organ from something that's not compatible with me. I go over to a horse and try to do a blood transfusion. Risky. I don't want to put something into me. I don't want to covenant myself with something that's not compatible. Now, why am I talking all about this on this first day of the year? It's a question of compatibility. That's what our Lord chose when he came to us, that God became man. God became one who was compatible with us. He's not Superman. He didn't come from a far distant planet, something completely foreign to us, like an alien. Jesus, that person who comes to us in flesh and blood, is more compatible with us than Superman was with Metropolis. Jesus is compatible with us precisely because he comes to us in flesh and blood. Flesh and blood that you and I have. That's what St. Paul tells us in this letter to the Galatians today, that Jesus, the God become man, was born of a woman. He didn't just come to her from an outside space or force. He was born of her. He took his flesh and his blood from Mary. And that's something that's so profound, that he has flesh and blood. He took it from Mary so that he would be compatible with me and with you. That's the mystery that we celebrate. It helps us understand Christmas and the Incarnation more clearly, this festival of Mary, the Mother of God. He had flesh. He had blood. Today, the eighth day of Christmas, is actually the day of Jesus's first shedding of blood. Now, this feast used to be called the Feast of the Circumcision. It was called that because we heard at the end of the gospel here, when 8 days were completed for his circumcision. This was the day that young boys would receive that sign of the covenant from Abraham, and they become members of Israel. They become members of the family of God, the Jews. And so this day is a celebration of Jesus's first shedding of blood, his introduction into the covenant of Abraham, though it certainly wouldn't be his last shedding of blood. But because he had flesh, because he had blood that could be shed, he's compatible with me. He fits with me, and so he's able to save me. This is a feast of blood and compatibility, but it's also a feast of adoption and covenant, that the Lord comes to us in ways that we can receive so that we too could become what he is, a son of God. You and I, through baptism, are adopted into the sonship, into the family of God. We become members of Christ's very body through baptism. And then we get to receive the fruit of that covenant in Holy Communion. What do we receive in Holy Communion? The flesh and the blood. We receive these parts of Jesus that actually are able to fit inside of us because of his coming to us in the flesh. And so, brothers and sisters, as we meditate on these mysteries today, let us remind ourselves that we are saved through Christ. We are saved through the blood that comes to us to refresh us and strengthen us and make us whole.